آپ ان میں سٹ ایز یو فیل کمفرٹیبل اینڈ ایف یو ویش یو کین کیپ یور آئیز اوپن وی ول ہیو آر ڈسکشن session we will finish 4 days of the retreat. That means each day as we progress slightly better than the other day. So each day it keeps on becoming better. Many of the questions that you have, you get the answers.
Which one question do I need?
Yeah.
This is your goal?
Some of the answers, of course, through the talks here, you get some answers. And some answers, of course, comes through your practice. But please understand, what are you trying to do by observing these feelings from head to feet? And I kept saying, observe objectively, objective observation. Just observe as it comes, as it is, not in the way you would like it to be. The meaning is, if there is no feelings, don't start saying, now I should have some feelings. If the feeling is there, it is there. If it is not there, it is not there. Keep on moving. We are here just to observe the reality as it is. Now why all these feelings, why all these sensations comes up? Let us try to analyze. Whatever actions that we perform, either mental action, verbal action, or any physical action, and our life is full of action. From the day we are born until now, we constantly keep on doing actions after actions, one or the other actions. And now please remember, all the actions that you perform, intentional actions, all the essence of all your actions goes deep into the human consciousness and settles down there. Let's take, for example, this bell here is like the mind. Our mind is full of impressions that you create through all your actions. Let's say you had a lot of anger, and the essence of the anger goes deep and settles down. How many anger we had in our lives up till now? Countless. There was greed, and you did a lot of action out of greed, and the essence of it goes deep into the human consciousness. Again, your mind is filling up. And likewise, of course, once in a while, you do some wonderful actions, you develop love, you develop compassion, you have affection, you have care for somebody. Again, the essence of that action also goes and settles down there. And likewise, actions after actions, our mind is completely full. There's no space in the mind. Absolutely no space in the mind. Our mind is full. And now what's happening? Our mind is overflowing. All the essence, impressions after impressions, it is overflowing now. And mind you, you may be 30 years old, 20 years old, for 20 years, impressions after impressions. And not only this, 20 years old, how many lives we have lived? All the impressions are created in the mind. Now what happens in a retreat like this? What are you trying to do? Please understand, vipassana means to purify the mind. Some of you does not understand what actually vipassana means. Vipassana meditation means to purify the mind, not to purify your body. It's to purify the mind. The goal of vipassana meditation is to purify the mind. What to purify? All the impressions that you've created and the mind which is so full of things, you're here to clear that mind, to purify that mind. And now, when you start to meditate, all sorts of things starts coming up in the body. And that is why initially you start observing very gross feelings at the body because of the condition here, the weather here, whatever it is, external conditions. Because of that, you start observing at the surface level of the body whatever is going on. And then slowly something starts coming up, something starts coming up in the form of many feelings, different manifestation. It manifests in the body in different ways. Now what's happening? During meditation, when you start calm down the mind, you are not creating impressions in the mind. When you start observing the feelings in the body, and if you don't react, you are not feeling your mind again. So let's say you start observing and you don't react. You don't generate hate for this, or you don't generate lust for this, or desire for this. You just observe and let go. Then what happens? You perform some actions, you observe it without reacting, then it does not create an impression in the mind. So you're not refilling the mind. Mind is full. There is no space. Absolutely it's full. But at least you're not overflowing it, so you've stopped giving, you've stopped filling the mind during meditation. That's what exercise you're doing. And then when you stop filling the mind, then what happens? All that is there in the mind now starts coming up on the surface. It comes up in different forms, either in the form of bodily sensation, bodily feelings or emotions, in different ways. Sometimes very subtle feelings, sometimes very gross feelings, sometimes very gross thinking, thoughts, all kinds of things starts coming up. And this is nothing but all that is there in the mind from many years, from many days, now it starts to come up. And now you have a choice. When these things come up and manifest in the form of thoughts or feelings, you have a choice. Now if it comes up, if you just observe it, and not react in the normal day that you do, reacting, something happens, you get so angry, something doesn't fulfill, you get so frustrated, anger, jealousy, all kinds of things starts reacting, and during this meditation, you are asked not to react, but just to observe. Now what happens? When any feelings comes up, if you just observe, when it comes up, you observe it, it goes and evaporates. It doesn't create an impression. That means it has stopped feeling the mind. Now when you stop feeling the mind, then also there is still feelings. Feelings are there. Constantly there are some or the other feelings are there. So the reaction is still there. Now all this which is at the base of the mind, what we call subconscious level of the mind, this starts coming up on the surface. This starts coming up on the surface. Now when it comes up, if you observe, then let's say one anger comes up from somewhere, or very unpleasant feeling comes from somewhere, and if it comes up, you observe it objectively, don't multiply, don't add to it, then what happens? It comes and then goes away. It comes and goes away. And that is how you start purifying the mind. That is why usually when you go on a retreat, long retreat or 10 days or 1 week, usually what happens is people feel very light after the retreat. You feel so light physically, you feel like, wow, wonderful, something happened. I don't know what happened. You feel light. When I was meditating in Burma, after 1 week, when I came out of the meditation center, my goodness, I felt like flying, you know, I was like somewhere in the air. So light, I felt like myself like a feather. Hey, what happened? Even one thing that comes up from a deep conscious level and it manifests in the surface of the body and you don't react, then what happens? A chunk of the things that is deep in the mind comes up and it evaporates. Then the mind becomes much lighter. Much lighter. And that is how constant purification has to be there. Constant purification of the mind. This is what you are practicing. Meditation is not to cure any physical ailments. You have not come here. If you have any physical problem, you should go to the doctor, not the meditation center. Meditation is to purify the mind. And of course, many a times, in many cases, miracles happen in meditation also. Why? Because much of the things that manifest in the body, in the form of any disease also, any problem also, is connected deeply with the mind. Deep level connection is there. Now, if you cure the mind, many a times physical ailments also disappears, also cures. Whether you like it or not, it cures. But if you come with this intention, oh, I've got this problem for a long time, now I go to this meditation center and it must go away, I'm very sorry. Instead of that going away, you might have even more pain. Don't be surprised. Because you're at the wrong place. You're not here to heal the body. But miracles happen, as I told you. In the meditation center that I was in Burma, I heard a real incident. One man from Europe, he had cancer. And then he thought, now since I have cancer, I'm going to die anyway. Of course, when you have cancer, you're going to die anyway. So he thought to himself, he heard from people, oh, you know, you can do some meditation, you're going to die anyway, but how about practice some meditation, at least you will develop some peace of mind before you die. And he heard, like these things in Burma, there are a lot of meditation programs going on, this and that, here. So he just went, you know, thinking that, oh, at least, at the end of my life, at least some peace of mind will be there and I will die peacefully. Thinking this, he came to Burma and he started meditating. Of course, the teacher starts telling him, started the same method, breathing exercise and then few days breathing meditation and walking exactly the same. Slow walking, very slow. In fact, I see we are faster than the Burmese. Burmese are even more slower. From here to the dining hall in Burma would have taken at least 20 minutes. And sometimes when you are hungry, you start telling, what this person, can he not walk faster? And of course, some people even more slow, very slow. Of course, I only realized it after like 1 week of meditation, the value of walking slowly. At times I felt like they should have at least a little bit faster, you know, what's wrong? It's too slow. Imagine, from here to there, 20 minutes. By the time you reach dining, well, you forget your hunger also. Now this is what happens. Same meditation was there, practicing was there. And after he practiced for like 1 month, and then he thought, now, you know, he had to do his regular medical checkup. And he thought, maybe I'll go and check up. Now the days are nearing, I'm going to die. And then he went to one of these doctors there, they checked. They said, what's your problem? He said, well, I have cancer and now I just want to see where has the cancer reached. Am I nearing or in a few days might be dying or something must be happening. And suddenly the doctors could not trace any symptom of cancer. Any symptom of cancer, mind you, what cancer? There was no symptom. And then he thought, maybe doctors are not so qualified here. And it happens sometimes in this, what do you call, the so-called developing countries. In Asia, they never trust one doctor. They keep on at least 2-3 doctors to make sure that this is right. And he thought, maybe, who knows, it's not correct diagnosis. So he went home to check. Same answer, sorry, there is no symptom, there is no cancer in your body. These things happen. But if he would have come to cure the cancer, probably he would have died in that center. Who knows? Because if you come here to cure your physical ailments, then you start reacting. Oh, why is it not going now? It should go by now. It should go by now. Keep on reacting. The reaction process starts, of course. And then all this starts coming, and you feel more miserable, more difficult, of course. This is what happens. Another incident in the same meditation center. Be careful, you might be also experiencing this. One American young boy came to this meditation center. He was a drug addict. So somebody told him, if you want to get rid of drug addiction and this and that and this, go to Burma and meditate. You know, Burma is the land of meditation. That's how it is advertised. Burma is like this. And then he went, came there, started meditating. Same thing, after 1 month, you know, he had the regular interview with the teacher like you have here. And suddenly he told the teacher, look, and the teacher asked him, how is your experience? How is things going on? And suddenly he started expressing, look, teacher, I sort of start levitating. He felt like he was not sitting on the ground, but he felt like he was flying. He was levitating from the ground. He felt it, not that he was doing it, but he just felt he was flying as if he was like somewhere else in the heavens or whatever it is. And then he told the teacher, well, I want to go back home now. The teacher said, why? He said, well, what I was looking for from meditation, I got it now. In America, I spent so much money to get this experience. Now I have it for free, so I'm going home. Through drugs, he used to experience this levitating or flying or whatever it is. And now he is experiencing, of course, these are part of meditation experience. It comes and goes, not permanent. But he didn't understand that. Just a little experience over this, he thought, this is it. This is what I want. Now freely I can get this, go home and just keep on practicing instead of spending hundreds of dollars just buying these drugs. This misconception also starts coming up in the meditation, remember. No matter what experience comes, your duty is just observe, that's all. Just observe objectively. Don't identify yourselves with anything, whatever, whether it is very gross, subtle, whatever it is, you don't react. In the normal day life, you keep on reacting, but now here, you tell yourself, no matter what happens, I'm not going to react, that's it. What are you trying to observe? You're trying to observe three things. Yesterday I told you the Buddha has shown a clear path. The path is called Sila, Samadhi and Panya. Of course, Sila and Samadhi you've been practicing all throughout these days. What is this Panya? Panya means to understand. What to understand? Understand the three characteristics of all phenomena that appears, that comes at the bodily level, mental level, whatever it is. What are the three characteristics? It is called universal characteristics. That means all conditioned things are impermanent. Everything is impermanent. And because things are impermanent, it is subject to suffering. Why subject to suffering? Because we always attach to ourselves with this illusion of I. But there is nothing called I. Anatta. In the language of the Buddha, it is called anicca, means impermanence. Dukkha, suffering. Anatta. Atta means self. Anatta means no self. But we are so much involved with this illusion of I that we create a lot huge image of ourselves. And that is a big problem. Now when you start to observe any phenomenon that comes up in the bodily level, mental level, your duty is to observe, not to let it go away. If there's a physical pain, this pain, this feeling, that feeling, you don't observe it to let it go away. And if you're doing that, then probably you're wrong. You observe it to understand the characteristics of it. And the character is anicca, impermanence. If you start understanding, oh, this is changing, then you don't start reacting. When it is anyway changing, why do you want to change it? Things are changing constantly and you want to change it before it is changing it. But in meditation, you remain very patient. Patiently, you just keep on observing, understanding, this also is changing. Constant change is there. Science discovered, if you look in a very powerful microscope and you look at your hand in a very powerful microscope, what will you see? All these atoms and molecules moving around and this and that. You don't see this hand like this. You might not want to look at your hand then, once you see it in a microscope. Now, 2,550 years ago, Buddha did the same discovery. The science says the smallest particle of element is atom. And of course, recently in 2 years, science also discovered that atom also can be further divided. The same discovery Buddha did through his meditation experience 2,000 years back. The same thing, Buddha called it kalapas. All these are kalapas made of small particles. Every small particle is like molecules, like the electrons and protons, what the science says, it's arising, passing. The same thing Buddha discovered. And if you go on experiencing that at a deeper level, you will start seeing this illusion of I is not there. But until and unless you get to that level, we always get lost in this illusion, I, my. And then I becomes mine. Mine becomes ours. And with this I, because we are so illusioned by the I, we keep on doing actions after actions to fulfill this I. Then when I becomes mine, the action becomes much bigger. Then ours becomes much more. We start fighting in the name of my house, in the name of my country, in the name of my religion. Sometimes I really, you know, even in a small place like Ladakh, you can see how this political thing is going on, people fighting for each other. And just before I came, there was a big meeting of the Buddhist Association. And they call themselves Buddhist. And what is the meeting? Who is going to be the president of the Buddhist organization? And you know the languages they use. And of course, because Ladakh is so small, we know each other very well, so people started inviting us, hey, come and see what's going on. The meeting is going on. What meeting is going on? Buddhist meeting is going on. What meeting? Fighting amongst each other. I want to be the president. He is doing this. He is doing that. He is doing... Because I'm trying to be always looking into my inner self, not loving others. I also went and sat there. I thought to myself, I really had to laugh to see how people are so blindly fighting for so silly things. I don't understand what they're going to get by this. And I told some of the leaders there, I said, you guys, what are you doing? Stop everything. Come to me. Do some meditation together. Probably you make some good decisions after it. And some of them say, yeah, Vivek, you're right. You know, only meditation will help. But nobody is ready to come to meditation. Everybody says, yes, you're right. Meditation is the only way. But nobody wants to practice it. Why? The fear is there. Because if they start meditation, how will they become the president then? You won't be signed up because you will see all this foolishness that goes out in the name of religion. You don't want to play that game. You know it's all ego game. And suddenly you remember, hey, there's no ego. Why do you want to become the president? They don't want to risk. Sometimes I feel when such things goes on, if Buddha or Jesus or all these gods are above the clouds and watching down, either the Buddha would be laughing, look at these foolish people, what are they doing with my teachings? I told to observe Shila, Samadhi, Panya, and I said Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta is the characteristics. Look at these people, what they're doing. Just the opposite. Fighting for this ego. Never thinking that, what? Life is so impermanent. Nobody is thinking what I thought. Exact opposite things are going on. Very unfortunate to see how we are so slave to this ego. Another instance, my brother is a very high Tibetan scholar, one of the highest Tibetan scholars. And just before I came here, we were having a big discussion on meditation, because Buddhist Tibetan monks, I believe, they practice this 3 years, 3 months, 3 days, completely lock themselves in a cave and meditate. So I told my brother, because I never see them meditating, so I told him, tell me, what do you practice? I mean, I don't understand, what do you practice? Because in the Theravada Buddhist countries, like in Thailand, Burma, Sri Lanka, we do Vipassana practice, we do this. I was trying to tell him that we try to practice meditation, and you know, at Dhamma House, we're trying to run this program, he knows that I'm doing all this. And then I asked him, what do you practice? And then he says, yeah, you know, I know meditation is very important, but you know, I'm not finding time. This is a monk who's saying. But then he told me a very wonderful thing, that actually he was practicing meditation all his life. And that I realized when he told me. Then he told me, you know, I do only one practice. That's all. It's my life practice. And I said, what are you doing? He told me, I constantly take a hammer and keep hitting this eye. Where's this eye? Keep hitting this eye. Sometimes he gets angry, he hits it. Hey, who are you this? This ego is there. So he told me, he keeps on, his whole life practice is to hit this ego. And that's what is the practice. All these ego-centric activities blinds us to the practice. And we cannot practice. Buddha says the most certain thing in life, whether you like it or not, is death. But probably for you people, maybe one more thing. Usually when I ask people, hey, what is the most certain thing in life? Some people tell me, well, Vivek, death, of course. But in our country, taxes. In our place, we don't know what tax is, because we don't tax. That's why we have huge houses with no taxing. That's why there's no switch to the electricity. And when people come to Dhamma House, they're looking for the switch. Vivek, this light has been on since morning. Where's the switch? I said, no switch here. Because no tax here. Now, the most certain thing in life is death, of course. And Buddha says, the most uncertain thing in life is living itself. What is the guarantee that you are going to live the very next moment? What is the guarantee? If you understand this, the most uncertain thing is living itself, then how can you just live? You have to be so alert. Hey, anything can happen to me tomorrow. Anything can happen the very next moment. Who has seen the next moment anyway? Let me live with this awareness. Moment to moment you will start living this life. Of course, you will start planning about life. I will do this. But you are completely aware. Hey, look, life is so fragile. Anything can happen any moment. What is the guarantee? Of course I plan, but if it happens. If it does not happen, yet you smile, because you know life is so uncertain. And another most unfortunate thing, whether you call it unfortunate or you call it fortunate, it's up to you. For me, it is very fortunate that you don't know when you're going to die. Supposing if we knew that we are going to live for like 80 years, of course you can plan. The first few years I'll do this, then I will do this, then I'll visit for a few years, I will do world tour, and then probably after that I'll do this, then I will die. Now if we knew, if we were sure that life was planned like this, then of course we can plan each step of your life very well. And each one of our lives would be so wonderful. Ah, so this is your plan. And you start going to this person. Ah, your life, so wonderful, so wonderful. Each life looks more wonderful than the other. Why all this frustration? Why all this depression? No chance, because you know clearly what to do. Because it is so very uncertain, all the problems in life starts coming. And that is why we are not so happy. Not so happy. Because we are, nothing is uncertain. One slight stroke, life is gone. Thinking, I should have done this, I should have done that, I should have done this, I should have done that. Suddenly people become suddenly very sick. Then what happens? Fear starts coming. Oh, what if I die now? And then suddenly you check out your list. So many things not fulfilled yet. I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this. So many things to do. When you look back, hardly there are any things where you look back and smile. Wow, it was wonderful. Now I can say goodbye to life and go away. There are many rare cases where you look back and smile and say, yeah, it's time. Let's say if you're 20 years old and suddenly doctor says you're going to die. Of course, you have a long list and plans are beyond 100 years, 200 years, 300 years. Endless planning. We plan in such a way that as if we're never going to die. That is the problem. And because we keep on planning, none of the plan, and of course whatever we plan, most of the time, all plans goes opposite. Why? Because nothing is certain. If you understand nothing is certain, then whatever you plan, yet you smile. Okay, these are the plans, if it happens, if it happens. But let me learn to live with the reality as of now, this very moment. That's all. So you start living, you start developing love, compassion, care, concern for others, don't disturb others, don't disturb and harm others. Like this wonderful, wonderful precept, Sheila, you start practicing. How can you harm somebody when life is so very uncertain? Now if you start developing care, this mind of saving lives, this mind of sharing, then what happens? You're developing so many good impressions after impressions. When you die, all you carry is your impressions. That's all you carry. And then you might die as well with a smile. In Burma, I got very sick. I was really very sick. Almost all my life, I'm all the time sick. Sometimes when I look back now, I feel like very lucky all this sickness came. And in Burma, you know, Burmese food is Burmese food. The food is here. On top of the food, this much of oil is there. And you know, it's Burmese oil. I don't know what kind of oil it is. They soaked the food in the oil. And then I had terrible stomach problem. Yeah, a terrible problem. Anyway, one day I was so sick and I was just about to die. Quote. And then I fell down, you know, I was grabbing the floor and I thought, now I'm going to die. And I just managed to shout and say, hey guys, come on, help me, somebody. And of course, some of my friends came, hey, what happened, Vivek? I said, I'm going to die, just take me to the hospital. And you know, Burma is Burma. They brought one jeep. And the jeep belonged to somehow like 1930s war or something, army jeep. So broken jeep. And they put me in that jeep and started driving to the hospital. Bumpy jeep. Already the roads are bumpy. And the jeep is like jumping. And I'm like, already I was really throwing, jumping myself with pain. And the jeep throws me double jumping. And that's how. And I thought to myself, Vivek, you're going to die. This bumpy jeep is going to end your life. Halfway to the hospital, jeep stopped. Nothing special. I did anticipate it. Jeep stopped. And then suddenly and I was jumping, you know, really. So much pain and nausea and everything. And the jeep stopped. And then they asked, hey, what happened? Two of my friends were there with me. One Nepali friend and, of course, one Ladakhi friend was there. They said, hey, what happened? What happened to the jeep? Sir, there is no petrol in the jeep. Petrol finished. After all, Burma is a Burma, in a poor country. When you go to the petrol station, you can't buy more than 1 gallon of petrol. You can't buy more than that. And to buy that, there is a long queue. And they managed to drive the jeep to the petrol station to just to see this long queue of cars. And when I saw this, I thought, finish. I'm dead. I was holding this rod in the jeep, jumping and jumping, and suddenly I thought, now I'm going to die. And suddenly when I thought that, slowly all the vision started, my eyes became completely blank, and then I lost completely all my strength and everything, and I was completely gone. But still my mind was very active. The thing was, of course, in Burma we were doing meditation and we were always talking about death. You know, in Buddhist, what we call psychology, there is a thing called, when you die, there is a death consciousness. That means it's a state of consciousness. Before you die, the consciousness is called death consciousness. And it will manifest in something. You will see something or you will experience something. So when I completely vanished, everything became completely dark. Now I started thinking, hey Vivek, look for your consciousness. What's coming? What's awaiting you next? Usually we say the death consciousness determines where you're going. That means if you see, say, some angels or something, I go to heaven. Or if I see some knife or something, then I go somewhere else. All these things, explanations are there. You will see something, something, something. So I started thinking, hey, what is coming in my mind at this moment because I'm dying? I was very curious as to where my next destiny is. Not afraid at all. And suddenly nothing. I was just trying to observe, but I couldn't feel, I couldn't hear anything. Absolutely nothing. And suddenly one thought came to my mind. Of course, in the university that I was studying, and even in my whole life, usually amongst my friends, I'm very much known with a great sense of humor, like making a lot of jokes and laughing. I'm very much known for that. I make a lot of jokes. And suddenly now I'm dying. One thought came to me, Vivek, you're going to die. All this life you've been joking all the time. Why don't you die with a joke? Wonderful idea. As soon as this thought came to me, why don't you die with a joke? Suddenly I woke up. And suddenly I came to senses, everything was okay. I was, you know, and two of my friends were like perspiring, they were like sweating, so afraid, Vivek is it. And as soon as I woke up, they were shaking me, hey, are you okay, Vivek? What's happening? This dad, we thought you're dead. As soon as he asked me, Vivek, how are you? I gave him such an answer. Of course, I said it in Hindi. It doesn't, when I translate in English, it doesn't really a joke. But anyway, I said it in such a Bollywood dialogue. Do you know Bollywood? It's a Hindi movie dialogue. I said a dialogue in Bollywood style. And even today, my friend tells me, this Vivek is a fool, he's a crazy man, because even when dying, he can make a joke. I could observe this only because I was meditating and only because I was trying to be very analytical. Where is this I? Where is this? Trying to analyze, trying to observe. This is the reason why I was so alert. Even when dying, I was just trying to see my mind. Hey, what's going on at this moment? What thoughts are coming? What feeling is coming? This is what happens. One of my other meditators who is traveling into Europe, he'll be traveling in the next coming months. He gives retreats in Germany, Belgium and all these countries. Very good friend. We are Dhamma brothers. Actually, we grew up in the same monastery for many years. And he's also my kind of teacher. And once he was flying from South India, from one state to another state. And when he was flying, suddenly, as soon as they took off, like 10 minutes later, there was a very big turbulence in the flight. Like the plane, like, you know, they had just served breakfast or whatever, and all the plates started flying and this and that, and the plane was going like this. All the people in the plane start screaming, shouting, hey, what's going to happen? Dying, and all this fear was there. They had just served breakfast or whatever it is. And then he looked around. Everybody was so scared or doing this or all kinds of drama. You know, all these covering this. As it is mentioned in that, that in the airplane you have this card where they show if something happens, you do this, you do that. People were doing this, doing that, shouting, screaming, everything was going on. Trying their best to save themselves. And it really went on. Like for like 10 minutes there was a big turbulence. It was like really the plane was going to crash. And my friend thought, he's a meditator, he thought, well look, I'm going to die anyway. And these people are also going to die anyway. So death is going to come anyway. So I'm going to die. Alright, this is my last time I'm going to live. And they had just served breakfast, he had finished everything. He had just a piece of cake in his hand. Left. And people were screaming, shouting, and everything was going on in the plane. And he told himself, well, look, I'm going to die. I might as well enjoy the cake and die. So he started eating his cake. Very calm, very peaceful, he started eating his cake. And of course, after like few minutes, the plane came down, very quiet, all the turbulence went away. And few people were sitting in front of him. They couldn't believe, because everybody started screaming, he was the only one enjoying his cake. And they went to him and said, weren't you afraid, scared? I mean, you were enjoying your cake? He said, well, look, death was there. It was there. Whether you laugh or whether you scream, nothing to death. So you might choose to smile and enjoy the little bit of last cake that is remaining. The choice is yours. If you understand the reality of the impermanence of life, you can accept the reality as it is and not keep on complaining about life. Not keep on complaining, not keep on complaining. There was a Brahmin student and a teacher in India. You know, Brahmins are the high caste society. In India we have four caste systems. In the Hindu social strata there are four caste systems. They are called the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras. Anyway, Brahmins are the so-called noble people. Brahmins think that nobody on earth can teach them. Only a Brahmin can teach the others. Very egoistic. Now, one Brahmin teacher tells his student, he says, hey look, I've been trying to teach you one particular lesson for many days and I see that you are not understanding this particular lesson. So therefore, now you go to this King Janak. Now King Janak means the name of the king was called Janak. He says, you go to this King Janak, he will be able to teach you this particular lesson that I've been trying to teach you for many years and you're not able to understand. Only this king can teach you. So you go to him. The Brahmin got so angry. He was so full of resentment. He said, what? I go to this king who is only a Kshatriya? And he's a low caste. How can he learn from him? And by the way, the Kshatriyas, they're warriors. What can he teach me? I don't see anything that I can learn from him. The Brahmin teacher knew he would react like this. He said, hey, look, I know. We are Brahmins. But just for this particular lesson, you're going to treat this king like me. You think that this king is your teacher and just give to him very humbly and learn this lesson. Anyway, very recently, resenting it, with so much of anger, so much of frustration, he starts walking. It was like 3 days walk to the king's palace. So he walked to the palace. And as soon as he came to the king's court, he saw the king sitting on a very high throne. There was singing, dancing, you know, music was going on, wine, drinking, lots of sensual desires were going on in the palace. And he came, so much of anger, and he started bowing down with so much of hate for the king. This king, I'm a Brahmin, what a shame that a Brahmin for the first time has to bow down to this low caste Kshatriya. He was so full of anger. Anyway, he was going down. The king was looking from the throne and he laughed. He said, "Hey Brahmin, I think you have come here to learn something. So if you have come here to learn something, you don't have to resist so much. Give up that ego, anger, resentment. Humble yourself, then only you can learn something. Just humble yourself. Otherwise you don't need to go down with so much of resistance." The Brahmin got so angry, he looked at the king and says, Yeah, I don't see anything that I can learn from you. And anyway, I have not come here to learn singing, dancing, music, wine and all this. And even if I learn something from you, I'm going to ruin my life. I'm going back. Very angry, he shouts at the king like this. The king smiles. King knew this ego of the Brahmin is not allowing him to learn the lesson that he's going to teach. So he said to the Brahmin, "Hey look, doesn't matter, you look at me, you feel there's nothing to learn here, doesn't matter, you go back. But look, you have come all the way, 3 days, you have walked all the way to this place, you must be very tired, why don't you just spend the night here, tomorrow morning you can leave." Brahmin thought, Brahmin was wise, he thought, yeah, of course I'm tired, you know. Unnecessary, why should I argue with him? Yes, he's true, I'm tired. Yes, I will spend the night, but tomorrow morning, early morning I will leave. He said like this, very arrogant. And the king said, "Who knows, by the way, the night will be the time when you will learn the lesson." He didn't argue, went with the king. The king came down, took him to the king's palace dining room. So much of food, like here. For me, this is a royal treat here. Before I came here, when I started thinking of going to Israel, when everything was being worked out for Israel, my only concern, the thought was, you know, usually in retreats, you won't have dinner. So Vivek, how are you going to manage? I told myself, no problem, I've dealt with many retreats. So I said, okay, yet another retreat, no problem. I'll drink some tea or something will be there, some juice will be there, doesn't matter. How did I know that there is going to be a big feast every night? So the king took him also to this big feast in the palace, very rich food. And he said to him, "All right, you enjoy this food. And then I will show you your bed, your room." All right, very happy. Inside he was very happy, but because of his ego, he didn't want to express that. So after dinner, the king takes him to his room and gives him the best room in the palace. And royal room is royal room. One example I gave you yesterday. The bed with water inside. And the king said, "This, very thick mattresses." I don't know what they do with such thick mattresses. But anyway, royal. They enjoy this royalty. So he said, "Well, this is your room. So you can take this for tonight. Tomorrow morning, you early morning, you leave, doesn't matter, I don't care. But sleep well tonight." So he gave him this bed and the king went away. All right, in the morning, the king comes back and says, "Hey, good morning. How are you doing? Did you sleep well?" Brahmin says, "The dinner was excellent. The food was great. The room, it was luxurious, amazing." But he said, "You gave me the best room. But why did you play this dirty joke with me?" What is this dirty joke? As soon as the king left, he went into his room and then he lie down on this beautiful, comfortable bed. As soon as he lie down, as he looked up, he saw a very big sword, a very big knife, hanging with a very thin thread. And as soon as he lie down, one slight move he makes on the bed, or one slight wind comes, this knife was just about to behead him. And whole night he couldn't sleep. The knife is coming down now. It's coming down now. He was so particular not to move, that a slight move can bring this knife down. And he asked the king, "What this dirty joke? You gave me the best room, but you didn't allow me to enjoy this room. I couldn't sleep even for one moment. I've not come here to commit suicide. What is this?" The king smiled. He said, "Look, yesterday when you came to my palace, when you came inside into the court and you saw me sitting high up on this throne, you only saw this singing and dancing and wine and all these, but you didn't see the same sword was also hanging just above my head with this thin thread, but you didn't see this. All you see is the other things around. And you become so judgmental about this." And he says, "By the way, this sword is always just above our head. Every one of us have this, but only thing is, it is invisible. And the name is called death." The Brahmin understood what his teacher wanted to teach him. That death can come any moment, one slight move, one slight... death is death. That is why our life is so fragile. No matter where you are at this moment, start from where you are to develop this mind to understand the impermanence of human life. If you understand anicca, the impermanence of life, you can live a life full of life. Otherwise, you don't live at all. We don't live at all. We keep on living either in the past or we keep on living in the future. We actually need to live this life. And meditation teaches you to actually live in this very moment, which is the life itself. That is why I kept telling you, if you ever want to measure your meditation, don't measure by 7 days coming here. Oh, 7 days, now something should happen in 7 days. Don't measure like this. If you measure like this, nothing is going to happen in 7 days. You might go back more frustrated, more angry. Why I've wasted my 7 days here. Don't measure it by hours even. 3 hours, 4 hours, I'm going to sit. Don't measure your meditation even by hours. If you ever want to measure your meditation, then measure by moments. One moment after the other. One moment after the other. You live this moment, you have lived your life. You miss to live this moment. You're resting, you're thinking this, complaining this, that, hundreds of things keep... all philosophical questions start coming up. What is this? What is that? Then you're not living in the moment. You're not living in this very moment, which is the truth of this moment. And that is why, when you are in this moment, at this moment, when you start observing your face, your head, your shoulders, whatever feeling is there, feeling at this moment, not the feeling that you had few years back. I had some feelings few years back. Is it still there? Nothing doing. At this moment, whatever the reality manifests on the body, you just remain aware with this understanding. This is also impermanent. This is also changing, changing, changing. If you start developing this understanding, this impermanence, then you don't suffer. Otherwise, because this constant change is there, we suffer because of this change. We don't want things to change, and change is inevitable. And that is why the Buddha says, dukkha is there. Understand why do you suffer. As soon as you start observing, you will start to understand. If you react, you suffer. You don't react, but just observe, understand the reality, the characteristics of its impermanence, anicca is there. When I was in Burma, when you had a wonderful experience, It is so, you are so excited, waiting to tell your teacher, you know, today you had a wonderful meditation. And in the evening when we have the interview, like you had, teacher, how was the meditation? Wonderful, you know, I was all over. And do you know what he says? He says, keep on saying, anicca, 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 anicca. That means in meditation, there is no wonderful, there is no horrible, you are going beyond duality. In meditation, you are going beyond duality. Duality is going beyond this, where the balance of your mind is maintained. Then only you are meditating. Otherwise, you are doing the same game, reacting, one pleasant feeling is there, you react with craving, attachment is there, wanting this, if one unpleasant thing comes, you start saying this, hating this. And that is why when I ask people, how is the meditation? Morning, wonderful, wonderful meditation. As soon as I hear people say, wonderful meditation, I am very skeptical. I certainly know, next moment he is coming back to me, saying, oh, now it's horrible, it's going reverse way. Understand, that wonderful moment also will change. Nothing is permanent. Every phenomenon, as it is said, constant changing, changing, changing. So for the next remaining days, whatever you have here, try to maintain this awareness of change. When you take each step, one step you take, it's changing already. One step you take, it's changing already. One step that you took is gone forever. It will never come back. It's gone forever. And this moment that you are having this discussion now, this is there now, and every word that I'm saying is passing, it's going. We will never ever meet again in the same condition, never. We will never ever discuss this in the same position, in the same place, I never in our life again. This is here now. You try to internalize it, try to practice it. If you take the benefit now, you've benefited. Otherwise, you go tomorrow and you say, ah, yesterday's discussion was so wonderful, can you have it again? Doesn't work. It will never ever happen. It's just gone forever. Our life is fleeting. Our life, moment to moment, our life is going. You might as well let the life go with a big smile. And the big smile can come only when you understand, oh yes, change is there. Don't resist the change. Welcome the change, and then you don't suffer. Keep on developing this understanding. Buddha emphasized anicca, dukkha, anatta. And let's say something happens and you are so bothered by this I. Go on analyzing. Let's see, what is this I? Keep on analyzing. Analyze. Where is this? Alright. Where is this I? Keep on analyzing. You will end up finding no I is there. It is only an illusion. All you find is some feelings will be there. But is that feeling you? No. If that feeling was I, then you tell this I, hey, stop feeling. If you stop immediately, nothing happens according to your wishes. Everything takes its own natural. The law of nature takes its own course. Don't try to disrupt the law of nature. That is why it is called vipassana. Vipassana is to work with the law of nature as it is. And we cannot create the law of nature. Law of nature, you can only observe to understand that it is this. Accept the law of nature, and there will not be conflict in your life. All conflict in life comes because we keep on going against the law of nature. Keep on going against the law of nature. And that is why all the conflict starts in life. One monk went to the Buddha and Buddha says, you know, suddenly he became enlightened. And after his enlightenment, he was going on alms round. And as he was going to the forest, there was one wife and husband who had a big fight. Usual. The wife got so angry and she left her husband and she was going to, she decided that I will go to my mother's place. And she was going. And suddenly, as she was going, she just met with the monk, and the monk was going so very mindfully, calmly and quietly. He was just going on his way. And suddenly this lady thought, oh, this monk is a great monk, and how can I go alone in the forest? Maybe I might as well follow this monk, so I'll be protected. So she started going. As soon as the husband came home, he discovered the wife is not there. He inquired in the neighbors, where's my wife? And suddenly they told him, she's angry, she went to our mother's place. So the husband started chasing to catch up with the wife, and suddenly he catched up. And suddenly he saw that the wife is going with this monk. He got so angry. And he said to his wife, how dare you go with this monk? And the wife said, look, the monk even didn't look at me. He's just going, I'm just following him, that's all. The monk didn't even look at this lady, he doesn't even know this lady. But the husband, so much of anger, jealousy is there, like usual, it happens with us also. So much of anger is there, just to resist and just to harm, hurt this wife's feelings, he said, all right, I'll teach this monk a lesson. So he holds this monk, poor monk, he beat him up black and blue. And then poor monk ended up in the monastery with all these bruises on the body. And then all these monks said, hey, isn't this all this pain? And were you not angry when this man beat you? He said, no, I was not angry. The other monks became very skeptical. How is it possible when somebody beating you up, you don't get angry? Doubtful. They said, no, he's telling lie. And then they took this to the Buddha and said, look, this monk, he's saying that somebody beat him up all the way, but he says, I didn't get angry. And the Buddha looked at him, he realized that this monk is an enlightened monk. And then the Buddha says, yes, he's enlightened. He's given up all hate, all resistance, all reactions, he's given up. He has only compassion. With people beating, he has only compassion out of it. And then the monk said, but he was not enlightened just a few days back. How can he be enlightened? Then the Buddha says, you can be enlightened by one step. By the time you take one step, you could be enlightened. And not only that, he said, by the time you lift and before your legs drops on the ground, you could be enlightened. Good hope, tomorrow, you take the step. Who knows? You might never put it down, you're enlightened. Or else you lift it up, put it down, you will never take it up, you are enlightened. Don't expect these things to happen, but if it happens, very good. Yesterday in my talk, I talked about degrees. Seems that some people have some questions on degrees. I don't deny degrees. I was just trying to point out the fact about what the life is all about. Modern education does give us knowledge to earn a living, to live in a society. We have to live. But I'm just pointing to this one. Of course, I was just joking with you, since this habit is there all the time with me. I was just joking to make sure that this joke has a truth in it, that the modern education needs to be changed, has to be changed, not just about material education, but it has to be given some sort of a meditative element into it. That was the old reason that I was telling you. And then somebody asked, what is the connection between meditation and happiness? This is a clear sign that for some people maybe meditation is miserable. Please understand that why when you start to meditate, all these things start coming up, why it doesn't come up in your daily life? It makes sense to ask this question. Because in daily life, you don't feel to suffer so much. Why? Because you feel a little bit uneasy, put on the music, or you put on the television, or you go for a walk, or you play tennis, or you do this, you do that, you're always escaping. Now here, where can you escape? No television, no radio, and on the day when you arrive, we said no reading, no writing, no music, nothing, Just practice that. So when you are focusing your whole attention towards yourself, of course, then you become aware of the reality. And many a times to face the reality is not so sweet. But you have to face it. And that is it. And as you start to face it, as you start to practice, and as you start to realize, hey, look, this is changing. I now understand. Oh, this is changing. The happiness that comes from this understanding, it is called real peace and real happiness. Otherwise, our normal day happiness, Buddha says, is also subject to suffering. Why? Because you have little happiness and then it changes and suddenly you keep on wanting to have that happiness, it doesn't happen. It is also changing, but here the happiness is a deeper level happiness with understanding. And that is why as you start to meditate, you start to experience real peace and real happiness. So keep on understanding that. And then somebody also asked, is meditation just a comfort for miserable? It is not a comfort for miserable. Meditation, if you practice seriously, if you practice in the right way, it is a medicine. You take the medicine, cure of all disease. Not just a comfort. Comfort is there, then it goes away again. No. If you practice seriously, as I keep on saying, misery is there in the mind. If you practice correctly, what do? One misery comes, you observe, evaporates. So likewise, miseries after miseries, misery. You keep on cleaning. A day comes when the mind is pure. That is what we call liberation. So the goal of meditation is ultimate liberation. And of course, each liberation must be one moment's liberation. Every moment you should be liberated. One moment experience is there. Observe objectively with this understanding, you are liberated. Don't wait. Don't think that after 7 days, After I do this meditation, maybe after I die, maybe I'll get something. No. Meditation, Buddha says, it has to be here and now. If it doesn't work here and now, then it's not meditation. And of course, there are a few other questions which I will eventually answer in my next talks. And during these few days, whatever is remaining, try to remain with this awareness and try to awake to this impermanence, anicca, dukkha, keep on understanding. Don't go into all these philosophical questions, these, that, you don't keep on thinking. After the retreat, you keep on thinking, doesn't matter. You keep on arguing, doesn't matter. But during these few days, just try to observe. If a thought comes, it is just a thought, just keep on observing. It is just emotion. Try to analyze. Who is this feeling? Where am I? Where is this I? If there is I or not? As soon as you find there is no I, all these feelings or emotion just disappears. So keep on practicing and make best use of this wonderful opportunity. Life is so precious. Keep on understanding. Life is so precious. Life means what? This every moment is so precious. Shall we all sit down for a few moments? Just visualize yourself smiling, very happy. Very fortunate that you have completed 4 days of this retreat. You're trying your best, feel yourself very fortunate that your continued effort is there. The good motivation is there, good intention is there, keep on developing this. Feel yourself very fortunate that you have come to these 4 days of retreat and see yourself smiling and happily growing in your meditation. Feel yourself smiling and feeling yourself very fortunate. Make a deep wishes, may I always remain happy. May I be free from all difficulties, of all confusions, tensions, fears, worries. wish yourself deeply from the heart. May I be free from all difficulties. May I keep on understanding, keep on developing, keep on understanding, keep on developing, so that I might enjoy real peace, enjoy real happiness, real peace, real happiness. As your teachers were trying to guide you for this retreat, see them also smiling, very happily participating, trying to guide you through the retreat, just trying to share their little experiences. Just see them smiling, very happy. And again, deeply make wishes, may my teachers always remain happy. May they be free from all obstacles, difficulty, and may they keep on sharing, keep on sharing, keep on sharing for the good of many, for the good of many. And may they also keep on developing real peace and real happiness. Real peace and real happiness. As all the brothers and sisters in the Dharma sitting in this hall, meditating together, practicing together, developing together, just visualize the whole group very happily trying to practice. And again, make a wishes. May all of you enjoy real peace. May all of you enjoy real happiness. May all of you be free from all difficulties, whether physical or mental. And may you keep on understanding the truth of this moment. The truth of this moment. And may all of you enjoy real peace, real happiness, real peace, real happiness. Visualize all the people managing this retreat in different faculties, with all the dedication, love and compassion. They've come here to serve this retreat. Just see them happily serving you with all the good intentions. See them smilingly, happily serving, doing their best. Seeing that all of you are very comfortable so that you may meditate well, see them smiling. And again make wishes, may all those who are serving enjoy real peace, enjoy real happiness. And may all of you come out of your difficulty, come out of your problems, whether physical or mental, and may all of you enjoy real peace, enjoy real happiness, enjoy real peace, enjoy real happiness. All of you keep your practice continued. Time is very precious. Keep on practicing, keep on practicing. Make best use of every moment, every moment.